You're listening to another episode of VGCast. VGCast, of course, is our video game podcast where we digest the latest video game news in our changelog, chat about what we've been playing in our game queue, and what to look forward to in the world of the video game industry. However, none of that will really be happening on this week's episode of VGCast, because this week, this episode is going to be our 2016 prediction special. So what does that mean? That means we are going to talk about what we think is going to be happening in the world of the video game industry for the year of 2016. But before we get into any of that, we got to introduce our co-host. And the man who's joining me today, our co-host, our buddy, and our friend, the man who's been snubbed for an Oscar nomination for the 28th time in a row, Mr. Troy Giles. What's up, buddy?
Not much. So I'm just a regular black man, huh? Getting snubbed for an Oscar nomination. not like this is an Oscar podcast or anything like that, but you know, it's kind of BS. But
who you think's going to win Best Actor?
It might just be Leo's year.
I think it's Leo's year.
I saw The Revenant. He should win it. Yeah, you know, if not him, the bear.
Talk about hashtag the struggle is real for The Revenant. Woo!
Yeah, you thank God that you're not living in those times anymore.
If you anybody listening has not seen that movie, this is not a movie review podcast, but you should totally go see that movie. It's pretty special. All right, so like I mentioned earlier, we're not going to do the change log. We're not really going to do the game queue because we got kind of a little bit of a packed show just dealing with predictions for 2016. So I thought what we could do is we'll start off this episode with just talking about what was perhaps some of the most memorable things from 2015. Maybe even if it's just one, what is the most memorable thing that you can remember from the year 2015 in the world of the video game industry? Troy, we'll start with you. What is there something that just sticks out much more in your memory for the year 2015 in the video game world than anything else? Was it possibly Satoru Iwata unfortunately passing away in early July, or was it PlayStation's E3 press conference that was just full of fabled games, or perhaps was it Microsoft embracing backwards compatibility? Is there anything that just like really jumps out at you?
I love to talk about all that stuff. But the thing that actually just hits a lot of just interesting twists and turns is just the saga that is Konami in general.
That's a good point. Yeah. Everything that happened from the beginning of the year to the end of the year with Metal Gear. Yeah, that's a good point.
Not just with Metal Gear. Konami just had a struggling year altogether. Mm-hmm. I mean, it started out with the cancellation of Silent Hills. That was this year. That was in April of this year. And they actually delisted themselves from the New York Stock Exchange at the same time.
Wow, I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah, I was like, oh, okay. Well, they canceled Silent Hills. Okay. I mean, you know, it had been an awesome game. It looked great. But okay. If they have to cancel it, they have to cancel it. Something must have happened. And then they just disappeared from the stock exchange. It's like, okay, so are they still even a company anymore or something? What's going on? And then the rumblings, you know, even before that were the rumblings of Kojima saying how, okay, this is going to be my last Metal Gear game. And then just strange things started happening with them. You know, his name being taken off the box. What else happened with Kojima during that time?
The Twitter, the fact that he was no longer allowed to tweet. I don't know when exactly that started happening, but at some point I remember with Hideo Kojima being an avid Twitter fan, basically at some point just quit tweeting. And it seemed as if his account was just kind of being taken over by Konami, and the only things he would tweet were retweets from the Konami Twitter handle. So I know Twitter, silly whatnot, but you have to remember Hideo Kojima was an avid tweeter, and he really enjoyed that install base that followed him on Twitter, and it was just suddenly, boom, he went silent.
Yeah. The fact that they basically got a whole new staff for Metal Gear games as well, like, while that whole thing was going on of him either being with the company anymore or is he not going to be with the company anymore, you know. And then certain parts of Konami were shuttering, like a division in Los Angeles got closed down. You know, the not the backlash of Metal Gear Solid 5. It was just the, you know, it was like, this doesn't seem like a Konami, this doesn't seem like a Kojima game. This does seem like a Konami more influence game than anything. And then just the complete and utter disrespect of Kojima at the Game Awards by just basically saying that, no, you're not allowed to come to the Game Awards. Even if your game wins any awards, you're not allowed to get any of them because you're not going to be there.
Yeah, and then just a week before that, I think it was a week before that, they had the award ceremony, I think in Japan, and a Konami rep accepted the award instead of Kojima again, or I guess prior to the Game Awards. And the other slippery thing right around that time was his going away party, where there were pictures of him having a go away party thrown by Konami employees because his contract was over and he was essentially not, his contract was not being renewed at Konami. And yet Konami releases a statement saying, we have no idea that he has a going away party. This is news to us. It was so bizarre.
Besides that, the reports of just the work conditions of Konami, you know, how it basically was slave labor, as some people would put it. Maybe not to that extreme, but just it seemed like a terrible company to work for. And just now seems like they are moving towards a more focused industry of mobile and just like pachinko machines, I guess. I don't know what Konami's actually doing anymore. I don't even think they know what they're doing anymore, but it's just weird. Very odd.
Very weird indeed. I think they've basically reported that they are definitely going after the mobile space. They are going after what is essentially like small gambling machines. And I think they're keeping their one AAA normal, you know, video game console release going, which is PES, which is their FIFA competitor, which really hasn't been a competitor, you know, for the last 5 or 10 years at least. So,
yeah.
You know, what good is it really going to do to keep PES around? I'm not sure. I'm sure there's people out there who love that series, just like there's people who love FIFA, but it hasn't really been much of a competition, at least not in Europe and the Americas. Perhaps maybe it's more of a competition in Japan or those, you know, more Eastern countries, but currently it's not too much of a deal or an issue over here in the West or in Europe. So that was certainly a fascinating story from 2015 because it lasted the entire year, it seemed like. It seemed like every month we were hearing new little tidbits of information, and more than likely that is what 2015 is going to be remembered for. More than likely, you know, looking back on this maybe 5, 10, even especially when Hideo Kojima is retired, or perhaps, you know, one day when he passes away this year, or 2015 rather, is probably going to be looked back on and go, wow, that was that year that all that crazy crap was happening with Konami. So I think I have to agree with you there. That's that probably is the most memorable issue or event of all of 2015, because kind of took over 2015, at least from the journalist's perspective. So, other than that, I think I just want to make a reference to, obviously, Satoru Iwata passing. That is no small thing, for sure. That was obviously, it didn't last all year. He passed away in early July. He was the CEO of Nintendo, and he had been for a long time. So that was no small issue. That was a very major blow to Nintendo, obviously to the Satoru's Iwata's family, to the people who really love Nintendo. And that really caused a big shakeup. And I don't really want to label that as like the most memorable, because I feel like that may be a bit disrespective, but that certainly had an impact on me when I heard that news. I was like, whoa, he seems so young. Like, oh my gosh. So that does leave a bit of a cloudiness for Nintendo going forward, perhaps partly to blame as to what happened the rest of the year with Nintendo. So I did want to make note of that. But the other really major thing that had my attention for a while was probably the PS4's E3 or Sony's E3 presentation, just because I went into that thinking, reading the reports and the rumors, especially on Facebook. I remember I commented on a friend of mine's Facebook status saying, "You're crazy. There's no way Final Fantasy VII is going to get remastered or re-released." I said, let's be honest, Shenmue 1 and Shenmue 2 were not that great of games. I love them, but they were not that great of games. There's no way a publisher is going to bring back Shenmue 3. And the third one was, as much as I really want Last Guardian to be released, that game has to be dead in the water by now. There's no way those are coming out. They nailed all three of those. In addition to that, you had really the coming out party of No Man's Sky, really showing very well on the E3 floors. So that's something that I will get to that later in terms of what do I think about those games in terms of their release dates. Mm-hmm. But man, was that like just a 1-2 and a boom 3 punch. Made me that day go, well, where's Half-Life 3 at now? In addition to that, you had like just the day before Fallout 4 just drop the mic moment with Bethesda. So maybe you could just wrap up all of E3 in that memorable issue there, because it's not like Microsoft had a weak E3 showing. They showed some fantastic games as well. So maybe I would just, oh, and you can, if we want to throw in the PC press conference as so disastrously awful that it was memorable, you could throw that in there as well.
The
so maybe
just PC like a conference, probably.
Just circle E3 on there. I think E3 perhaps overall, probably mostly due to PS4's or Sony's announcements of dead games coming to life, but really as a whole, that, you know, the Fallout Pip-Boy being shown off and, you know, the developer saying, yeah, we don't want these little accessories to be shit like everyone else's. This is ours and we think it's awesome. So I really think E3 was a really big moment this year that is probably more memorable than maybe any of the E3s of the past 5 to 10 years. Maybe you could throw in the announcements of the new consoles in 2013. But that was kind of a weird year because in 2013, Sony had already announced the PS4 in February. And remember, E3 is in June. And then Microsoft had actually already announced the Xbox One maybe like a month before E3. So it wasn't like E3 was this drop the mic moment of, boom, here's our new consoles. They had already announced them. So I really think E3 this past year was probably one of the most memorable that we've had in recent memory. So, but yeah. I think the Konami thing is the surefire winner there. It's, man, what a crazy arc and what a crazy just chain of events. Everything from the, like you said, this delisting themselves from the stock exchange to finally Hideo Kojima leaving and having a going away party and Konami still being like, what? We don't know what you're talking about. So strange. So bizarre. All right. Anything else that caught your mind in 2016? Or, I'm sorry, 2015 that you wanted to talk about before we move on to bold predictions?
2015 did also seem like the year of the underdog. A lot more independent games were making more headway than the major games were.
Right.
Such as things, Rocket League, Undertale, Ori and the Blind Forest. Those games really, really took off and showed a lot of promise for the companies that made them and showed that you don't need to make millions and millions of dollars and do development like that. You can just, hey, three cars or four cars versus four cars pushing a soccer ball around. That's all you need. Honestly, that's all you need. And then the more AAA titles just kind of either being eh or complete garbage. Batman, we're talking about you.
Yeah.
And sadly, I went back and started playing that again. Anyway, Fallout 4 was more of a... It wasn't a nuclear explosion like it should have been. It was kind of a decent carpet bombing, I guess. It wasn't just the hit that it needed to be, apparently, to some people. And just other games out there that just didn't seem to hit their marks. or wanting to come back from an abysmal showing in 2014, such as Assassin's Creed coming back in 2015 with a better game.
Right. Or I would maybe even add Halo to that list. Yeah. You know, Halo finally coming back, and for the most part, pretty an underwhelming performance from a Halo game, which is so bizarre because those games have always been really high scorers in terms of just reviews. And this was kind of like the first one that was. It seemed like a lot of people were really frustrated with Halo, and I think you're dead right there. Yeah, it's a lot of AAA games have been just kind of fumbling the ball in a certain sense. Whereas before, it would be, you know, there wouldn't really be much of a question. There'd be so many, you know, balls getting knocked out of the park. Or in this one, this year, it did seem like there were quite a few fumbles with the disaster of the PC release for Arkham Asylum or Arkham Knight being probably at the forefront of that, to even the smaller games or the smaller mistakes like something like Halo 5 being a big issue. So,
and hell, Batman started that one off basically.
Yeah,
coming out in June.
I feel like there was a theme starting with Unity in 2014 of so many broken games coming out, right? I mean, The Witcher wasn't a disaster in the sense that Arkham Knight was for PC, but The Witcher did have a large string of problems, if people remember. Nothing that was super game-breaking or really game-breaking at all, but I remember actually talking about this on the podcast, that was one of my big issues, and I didn't want to let the developer off the hook, was that they had issues on multiple platforms that were prohibiting people from progressing through the game that could be patched in, but there were still those problems nonetheless. Even things on the PC side, you know, there were save game issues. There were issues with your Xbox One going to sleep. You could lose save data, which that was a trend. I remember Ori had that issue as well early in the summer. And I don't know what happened in 2015. Perhaps the developers, you know, maybe bit off more than they could chew, but it seemed like 2015 had this trend of everyone going the Bethesda route and thinking, well, F it, we'll just patch in the extra work that we need to do with the games having like 28 gigabyte patches on day one and things like that. Mm-hmm. So Tony Hawk Pro Skater 5, that actually came out.
A disaster.
Yeah. I had a friend who purchased that game, and I remember seeing it on Xbox Live Friends, and I went, oh boy. I hope he didn't know what he was getting into, and rather than he knew what he was getting into and bought it anyway. So
yeah.
Maybe he rented it. I don't know.
Maybe.
Can people still rent video games? Yeah, Is that a thing?
If they have Gamefly, they can technically rent it, I guess.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true. Although, do you think Gamefly actually rented Tony Hawk Pro Skater 5?
If there was a physical copy, I don't know. Were there physical copies of that game, or was it all digital?
No, they had physical copies because if you remember, there was a patch for that game that was larger than the file size on the actual disc.
So, I mean, yeah, if they had a physical game, then more than likely Gamefly had it. They probably didn't have a lot of them, but they had it. So someone must have rented it.
Makes sense.
They may not have it anymore, but they did have it.
Yeah, that did seem to be an unfortunate trend, although towards the very end of the year, it seemed like things were starting to turn around with the new Assassin's Creed being pretty good. Fallout got patched up pretty quickly and seemed to be a pretty stable game. Tomb Raider was phenomenal. Granted, that game launched on one platform. A couple of games obviously got delayed into 2016 that were expected to drop 2015, probably for the better. XCOM, Uncharted, etc. So, unfortunately, it did seem like that was a theme, but it seems like we are moving in the right direction to where hopefully these games won't continue to follow that trend.
Maybe.
And the developers are learning from their mistakes. Mm-hmm. So
we'll see.
We will see by examining the year 2016. So let's move right into our bold predictions, Troy, and we will start with you. I hope you have a couple of these, because I have a couple of these. I have a few of these.
Yeah.
Mine
are probably, I won't say they're all negative, but some of them are negative.
Well, here's what we're going to do, guys. We are going to first list off a couple of our bold predictions, just general predictions of how we think 2016 is going to go, more along the lines of safe bets, right? So If this was the year 2013, we would say, oh, we think Xbox and Sony are going to release new consoles. That would probably be a bold prediction, a safe bet. But then after we get done with those, we're going to jump into ludicrous theories, which are just off-the-wall bonkers theories that we think Sony, Microsoft, Nintendo, Ubisoft, EA, whoever might be planning, might have up their secret sleeve for the year 2016. So, Troy, give me one. What's up?
So you want a safe bet?
A safe bet, a bold prediction.
I think that PlayStation VR will come in cheaper than the Oculus Rift. Because as of a couple weeks ago, we were shown the price point for the Oculus Rift will be $600.
Right.
And a lot of us are like, wow, we're not playing VR then. And then also with that, you get the whole $600, and then you have to buy a new graphics card because you need a certain graphics card to be able to work the Oculus Rift on your computer. So
that's right.
PlayStation's probably looking at that and saying, huh, well, they won't have to spend potentially $900 because the recommended graphics card is a NVIDIA 970, and those are going for about $300 online
that's
right
true.
Now.
That's right.
So about $900 for the whole setup. And not to mention, you won't even get the Oculus Touch. You won't even get the touch controller, basically, with it. So, PlayStation's looking at that and thinking, okay, you're going to be using the Move for our system, so we already have something available for you. Might as well knock it down to within reason, probably within the price point of an actual PlayStation 4. I will think it will probably go down to about. Well, no. I won't say $300. I'll think
$400.
Yeah, $400 would be the safe bet for them. $200 cheaper. I don't know how much the Move costs, but I'm pretty sure it probably won't cost another $200 for the Move. So something less than what you'll have to be dealing with the Oculus Rift would probably be a safe bet.
Well, the good thing in Sony's category here is the PlayStation 4 controllers are very similar to the Move controllers. They're not as motion sensitive, but that technology they developed for the PS3 with the light on the end is actually the technology they implemented back into the PS4 controller, because those PS4 controllers have those lights on the end, which were the lights designed for the PlayStation Move controller. So it is possible to think that whatever they want to use those Move controllers for, you could maybe do some of that basic movement with the PS4 controller in an attempt to bring down the cost so you don't have to have Oculus Touch controllers. Maybe you could use the touchpad on the PS4, or maybe the light, the headset tracks the light on the bottom of the controller to act as like how to gauge where your hands are on the virtual steering wheel or something along those lines. So that would be something beneficial to Sony to help try and keep that price down. That would be in favor of your prediction there. However, I think I'm going to have to go against you on that, because one of my bold predictions is that PlayStation VR is going to be more expensive than Oculus.
Really? More expensive?
Yes, right. Now, let me explain my thinking along this. It's very interesting that you saw what Oculus said and took it a different way. I looked at it and took it in the opposite direction, essentially. What I viewed on that is, I felt like HTC and Steam, or HTC and Vive, who is making the Valve, rather, is making the Vive headset, as well as Sony making the PS4, and there's a fourth party. I think it might be Razer or somebody. Anyway.
Whatever.
They haven't announced prices yet, because I feel like they're waiting for the first company to announce a price so they can structure their prices around it. And what I think has happened is HTC and Valve are targeting a premium experience, so theirs will be more. But I think Sony is going to look at this and say, hey, everyone's going to be wanting an Oculus. It's $600. They can't get an Oculus without also upgrading their graphics card. And most of those people who perhaps want a PSVR won't even have a PC capable of running this, that they don't already have to get a CPU and memory and hard drives and monitors and all that good stuff. So what I think they're going to do, they're going to drop this thing at $699, and because they know that people are going to want this, people are going to expect a $600 price tag, and they're going to be able to justify selling this thing at $6.99, probably incorrectly. I'm going to go ahead and say that this is going to be a bad idea. But they're going to justify that and jack the price to $6.99. And what adds to that prediction, yeah, I know, I don't like it either. I think that's what they're going to do, though. What adds to that prediction, though, many people don't actually know this. The PS4 VR headset, it's not just a headset. You're actually buying a graphics card and processor in a separate box, a computing box that the headset then connects to, and that computing box that has more processing power in it then connects to a PS4. So you're getting the processing power of a PS4 and this little processor box that is about the size of a Wii U, from all the reports that I've seen, has its own cooling fans, etc. You're paying for that box as well as the PlayStation 4's headset. So if that headset is completely one-to-one match with the Oculus headset, you subtract the price of the Xbox One controller, maybe let's say $40 or $50, because Oculus comes with that controller, and then you have to charge or make up for the price of that computing box. Mm-hmm. I think Sony's got a bit of a problem on their hands here, because I don't think that box can sell that box and headset if it's as to be as good as the Oculus headset, which is a really good headset. That thing is justifiably expensive, maybe not justifiably $600 expensive, but that headset has essentially two individual screens locked at 75 hertz above the normal clock rate of about 60 hertz. And each screen, I believe, operates at 1080p. Maybe it's slightly above 1080p in order to keep the pixel density down. I think it actually may be correct. It may operate at 2K, twice the resolution of 1080p, so or HD content. Anyway, so if the PlayStation VR is to be a match for those specs, to be a high-quality visor, high-quality audio, and have this computing box attached to it as well, I think they're going to have to drop or push the price up to $6.99, which I think is going to be an awful move. I hope this thing launches for below Oculus price, like you predicted. I don't think they're going to move units if they go above. I don't think they'll move units if they sell it for $600, and I don't think they'll move units if they go for $700. I think that's a huge pill to swallow, but man, I hope you're right. I hope I am so wrong on this one, but unfortunately, that is my prediction. So that's interesting that you think you're hovering around 400, maybe 450, somewhere around there if they really had to. And I'm looking at 700. That's a huge difference. Wow.
It is a ginormous difference. The only thing I can think of that would be great if they did it like that would be that you bundle it up with a PS4 and then charge $900 for the bundle for the PlayStation VR and a PS4. I could see a lot more people possibly doing that and not thinking it's going to be much of a hit, you know, taking much of a hit, but I don't know. I mean, that would technically mean that the PS4 would be $200.
This is such a difficult thing to market, because if you do not have in-store demos set up and good in-store demos, this thing is not going to sell. No, if it's at $700, even perhaps if it is at $400, people who don't have a PlayStation, like yourself, the idea that you're going to have to drop $800 in order to get that experience, like you said earlier, that's basically the price of Oculus, right? And you don't really have to do much else. You can still use your PC and you'll be fine. You just upgrade your graphics card and boom, you get Oculus. You get an Xbox One controller as a bonus. There's really not a lot of incentive for them to be able to push this PlayStation VR to people like yourself who has not already purchased a PS4 unless they bring that price down. And if they do really good demos, if they don't do that, this thing is going to tank, and probably you could throw Oculus and Vive in there as well. They have to demo this thing really well, because a mom is not going to spend $700 for a VR headset. She can't demo. And in addition, this thing is such a solo experience. Like, you cannot, if you get this, you can't share this with your girlfriend unless she puts it on herself. And then she can't share it with you. This is a very one-sided experience that only one person can really truly experience at a time, unlike someone watching you play a video game or Smash Brothers, for example, where many people can come in and enjoy this. So it's very difficult, I think, to sell these headsets without good presentations and good demos. And it's difficult, I think, to sell them to families.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's definitely difficult to sell to families. And besides the fact that, okay, if one person's wearing the headset, the other person can basically look at whatever screen it's being projected on. That's about it. That's all you pretty much got. Like, some, you know, certain games you can still look at the screen. Like, if it's on the PC, you can look at it on a PC screen as well. So I guess whoever's looking at what you're playing can feel a little bit involved, but they're not going to be as involved as wearing the headset. It's not, right. You're not playing multiplayer with, and I mean, that may be a step in the future where you're being able to play multiplayer with VR headsets, but who wants to buy two VR headsets? And I guess the only other problem that VR is facing, their game library is kind of sparse. I mean, besides the stuff that actually already has VR components in it, like Elite Dangerous has VR components in it. You can play that in VR. Alien Isolation, things like that. The actual just VR-only games are very, very sparse and lackluster. There may be like one or two out of the list that might be viable, but other than that, they're just, why would I get this just to play like one game?
There's a big problem right now for games. A lot of the games that we have seen, and obviously neither one of us have tried really the Oculus Vive or PSVR. I have had a chance to try Samsung Gear VR, but it's not quite the same. Regardless, the games that they have shown, that developers have shown, are intended for these VR headsets, these expensive VR headsets. None of them are your AAA big budget games, in a sense. You don't really have Assassin's Creed or Arkham Knight or The Witcher or FIFA or Madden. None of these big budget games are in VR. So the games you can expect are these small scale, small time frame, almost indie level games, which indie games can be great. Look at Rocket League and No Man's Sky, essentially. But, you know, I don't want a VR headset to play Braid. I don't really think that's necessary. So I agree with you there. I really want VR to be successful, but what's the software seller here? What's the system seller? You know, every console in history, the one that wins, it's not the most powerful, the most prettiest. It's the one who has the best game. So I cannot believe we are so close to these releases. And by close, I guess that's speculative because Vive is supposed to start shipping out first half of this year to basically developers, but anybody who wants to spend a lot of money. Oculus already has pre-orders out. But, you know, what are the launch titles? What are the really good games? Eve is supposedly supported by Oculus, and I'm sure that's a really good game in the headset, but I don't really want to spend all of my time in one game. You're absolutely right. I want to see more games. All right, so we both had a bold prediction of the PlayStation VR being a certain price. So, Troy, you got another safe bet?
Let's see. What's a good safe bet? There will be another Call of Duty game. it is a safe bet. Although I say that, and then there's possibly not going to be another Assassin's Creed game next year. So that's interesting.
I think that's basically a done deal, right? They're not really.
Yeah, they're not doing another one this year, and that potentially the next one will be in ancient Egypt or. Egypt. I don't know if they used the term ancient or not, but Egypt.
I thought it was funny that Kotaku was the one who broke that story. And if you remember, Kotaku was the one recently who posted this article basically whining and complaining with good measure. I don't want to sound as if I'm bashing Kotaku for this, but they were whining and complaining that they had essentially been blacklisted by publishers like Ubisoft and others for their investigative reporting on titles such as the Assassin's Creed franchise, and publishing news stories about their games before their games are announced. So they did it with Unity, they did it with Syndicate, when they got all this stuff right, actually. And now I think it's funny that they've been blacklisted, and they whined and complained about it on a news post, and here they are. Just keep on trucking, which, more power to Kotaku. That's great journalism. And that's a news story people want to know about Assassin's Creed. But I thought that was interesting. So.
But an actual prediction that probably will come true is that we will start seeing the expansion stuff for Fallout 4.
Yeah, the season pass stuff.
Yeah, we'll start seeing what that actually entails. Now, I know Fallout 4 is kind of falling off your radar, and I've been playing it here or there. It's a fun game to waste a little bit of time in just to, like, okay, there's an interesting quest. Let me do that and see what comes of it and stuff like that. And I, like I said, I finished one story part already, so I'm actually going to go back and choose a different part so that the story can go down a different path. But we'll finally see some of the DLC that is supposed to be coming out for this game.
It blows my mind that Fallout 4 has a season pass. Like, does that game need more content?
It probably doesn't. I mean, honestly, Fallout 3 really didn't need to have a lot of content either, but it did. Had like four. It had four DLCs. I think about three of them were actually really good. The other one was just like, oh, okay, yeah, it's a nice little add-on. But yeah, I mean, I would think that. I don't know if we'll get anything that was as spectacular as some of the Fallout 3 ones were, but it'll be a nice change of pace. Maybe some new locations like Fallout 3 did. So, and you can, since you can actually continue on with the story of Fallout 4, you know, it's that you won't need any DLC where that has to happen, where the story mode basically changes, but something new, something different would be nice to have in there.
Right.
Maybe some new creatures, some new weapons, new armor, things like that.
All right, here we go. Here is a bold prediction. Xbox shows a new slim model for the Xbox One, as well as a refreshed controller. So, there is history here between both of these claims. I think it's time. I think it's a great way to reinvigorate the console, and it's shown Sony has done this for the past two generations, for the 3 and the 2, I believe. So PS3 and PS2. Microsoft did it with the 360, and I think they kind of did it with the original Xbox. It wasn't a slim model, but they kind of tweaked the insides. There is a lot of history here for these companies doing this type of thing, releasing a slim model, because it is a great way to reinvigorate people, to even get people who've already purchased a console to repurchase a new one. I think it would be a great time to, I'm not exactly predicting this, but I think it would be a great time to say, new slim model, every one of them comes with a 1 terabyte hard drive, $299 price tag, or perhaps maybe just leave it at $350. But I think it'd be a great time to do that. With here it is, they came out 2013, so by fall, we'll be about 3 years into the life cycle. We'll be going into the fourth year. I think that'd be a great time to do that, to refresh the image, make that console smaller. I'm sure they left it as big as they did to make sure they had enough cooling. Whatever the systems are in place now, I'm sure they are efficient and they know how they're going to work. There's no major red ring of death problems this time. Drop that bad boy down, slim it up, make it look even more awesome. Slap on a terabyte hard drive, refresh that controller with already rechargeable batteries, similar to the PS4's controller inside. Maybe add in some of those Xbox Elite controller designs or implementations into the Xbox One controller. Maybe make it a little lighter or something. And boom, there you go. You got essentially a new console and a new controller that is still friendly to the developers who are developing for the Xbox One. And boom, you got some invigoration into the Xbox brand, and perhaps you start nabbing back some of those people who left Microsoft for a PS4. You nab them back over. Now that's the time they get one. They know the hardware is going to work this time. They got a slim model. It's a lot cooler. It's got a better controller. So I think that's the time to do it, is this fall, and I think Microsoft is going to do it. Maybe Sony does it as well, but I think Microsoft is in a better position to actually do that. What do you think about that, Troy?
You know what? I mean, I could definitely see a slim model. It's about that time where you just said it's like 3 years into the life cycle of these systems. It's about that time that a slim model should be shown, you know, whatever it's going to be called, either Xbox or PS4 Slim or whatever little codename it'll have. Now, controller-wise, I don't know if Xbox would do a revamped controller and may just go ahead and package the Elite controller in a slim model, because if you have them do another controller, then what was the whole point of the Elite controller then? Because you lose the design of what the controller is to make it different. Then you lose that design for the Elite controller, which is basically the same. Now I would gladly have the rechargeable batteries in them and stuff like that, but I mean, instead of having to get a play and charge kit, basically. But the design thing, it can't really be done, because then they would just be like, oh, well, we released this Elite controller that will now look completely different to the redesign of the controller that we're going to have, you know, so might as well just pack an Elite controller in there and call it a day. I know they'd hate to do that with how much Elite controllers cost.
Mm-hmm.
For people to buy. I don't know how much they actually cost to make, but people buy them at a ridiculous price. And I don't know if they'd want to lose that, but it'd be the better choice to just pack one of those controllers in there. The terabyte that you'd want in there, I'd almost think it'd be better as an external terabyte. I don't know why, but I just feel like it might work better as an external terabyte instead of inside the actual machine. But just to give it more of that slimness that you want. But I don't know. It'd be interesting to see.
Yeah, I'd be curious to see how radical of a design difference they do there. Because if you remember the 360, it's concave white look. Eventually they warped it into the black look with the Elite model, but it was really that slim edition that came out in, I think, 2011, that the really high glossy black model that looked like it had been designed by Ferrari or something. It looks really nice, but it was such a radical change from that initial white, almost Japanese like concave look from the original 360. So, and even with Sony, what they did with their PlayStation 3, with originally it looking like a George Foreman grill to what it eventually became, it was pretty radical shift there as well. So I would be really curious to see what, if Microsoft does release a slim model, controller part aside, like how radical of a difference would that be? And the whole hard drive thing would be really interesting, because one of the largest parts in your computer, other than, you know, maybe your graphics card and your power supply, and really the motherboard, which is very, very thin, but very, very long, obviously. The hard drive is a very large piece. And if you look at a game console, it's one of the largest pieces, because the graphics cards and the processors and things and the memory are such low profile designs. They're designed to be very small and very minuscule. The hard drive is one of those things, they can't get it any smaller. It's the PlayStation 4, I just replaced the hard drive in my PS4 to increase its size. It's the exact same hard drive in your computer, like that you put in your computer. They're the same hard drives. Same thing with the Xbox One. So you take those big hard drives, you find a way to get them out, those 3.5-inch drives out of there. That's a lot of space that you could save on the inside of that Xbox One. So that's a really interesting idea, because they already support external hard drives. So why not?
Yeah, I'm looking at mine. The external hard drive that I have is about the size of a cell phone, mm-hmm. and it's a terabyte. So, I mean, and I would...
And it's pretty thick, I bet, too. It's probably thick as a couple of cell phones,
what,
right?
My external hard drive? No.
Yeah.
It's really? As thick as an actual... It's basically the size of a cell phone. It's thick and as wide and as long as a cell phone. It's tiny, but I mean, it's a terabyte, and it's a lot faster than the drive that comes in the Xbox One.
Yeah, I would imagine that the one that's in the Xbox One is probably thicker, just because they were trying to keep the cost down, so they probably went, you know, a cheaper drive that probably doesn't have as many design implementations in it, because that is a big hard drive. I don't know, I have to look at pictures on the inside of the Xbox One, but I would imagine it's thicker than that really nice slim profile external that you have, because I've got an external right here on my computer desk, and it's about as wide, or I'm sorry, tall and as long as an iPhone, but 2 terabytes, it's with the casing and all, it's probably as thick as 2 to 3 cell phones. Just by Western Digital. Regardless, that's a lot of space that you could save if you're trying to slim down a game console. Try to slim down the insides. That's a lot of space. That's a lot of cables you don't have to connect, because that's another power cable, another SATA port that you got to run. So that's definitely room to shrink down the insides of
the console. Yeah, because mine is only... All I got to do is connect the USB cable to my hard drive, and that's it. It's a USB straight to the system, and that's it. No external power, nothing like that. So,
right. That is a glory. Hey, maybe they could get a new Xbox with a USB Type-C. Why they would do that, I have no idea. I don't really know. I know USB Type-C is better because it's you can put it in anyway. You know, more like you have to have it lined up properly and it's blah, blah, blah. It just goes in. Doesn't matter. It's just like lightning port. But maybe they do something crazy like that. USB Type-C, though I think they'd be shooting themselves in the foot because all the play and charge kits are USB either 2.0 or 3.0. All your hard drives are usually Type 3, 3.0. They've already convinced everyone to get hard drives, externals, the Xbox One, which have to be USB 3.0. So that would probably be a bad move, actually, if they did USB Type-C. So... all right, so Troy, you got another one? You got another bold prediction, safe bet?
I don't know about bold.
Wait, if you only have crazy ones, if you only have ludicrous ones, save of that. I got some more bold ones I can drop.
Let me think. Is there any other bold ones out there?
All right, I'll tell you what. I'll give you...
Yeah, you go ahead and go.
I'm just going to give you a couple of games that I think are not going to make 2016 before... we do my final like bold prediction. So just a couple games that I think are not going to make 2016. Final Fantasy VII, I think is I think you would agree with me, is a 2017 release. Yes?
Yeah. No. Yeah. 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 Definitely.
Okay. All right. That's it. We'll set that one in concrete. Final Fantasy VII pushes back to 2017, whether it's February or whether it's December 2017.
Oh, wait a second.
What?
Now, wait, are we talking about a full release of the game, or are we talking like episode one of Final Fantasy VII, depending on how this episodic thing is going to go?
I'm going to go out and say not a single minute of Final Fantasy VII gameplay is released for the public in 2016. I'm going to say it gets pushed back at least the first episode, if not the entire production gets pushed back to 2017.
If it does hit 16, it's going to be late. Episode. Late.
Oh, yeah.
Late 16. Like, it'll be at the very last minute of 16.
December 31st, 11:59. Boom. Release it.
Wouldn't surprise me. Sounds like something crazy that Square would do. Yeah, I agree with you on that one.
All right. Last Guardian, 2017.
Why not? I mean, sure. Okay. I'm not even sure if the game is going. It's going to be released, but yeah, definitely okay. 2017.
All right. So that's cool. You agree with me on that. And then here's the one that's a bit hard to swallow. Also a game release. I think.
I'll say Star Citizen.
Zelda never comes out on Wii U, and that it is pushed into, unfortunately, regrettably, into the NX release cycle for whenever that console comes out. I think Zelda, the open world game that has so many people have been hyped for because it looks so promising for Wii U, I think that game never comes out on Wii U and instead is pushed into NX if NX is released this year. What do you think about that?
Wait, so... Okay, so you're going to say that the NX is going to be released this year, but Zelda won't be released with it.
I'm saying, release date aside, I'm saying the new Zelda open world game that they showed on Wii U, mm-hmm. A, never gets released on Wii U, mm-hmm. B, it's pushed into the NX's release date cycle, whether that's the day of release, so like Mario 64, or rather that's a month after NX release, or what? I think it never hits Wii U, and B, it comes out on NX whenever NX launches. So whether that's in December of this year or January of next year or December of next year, I think Zelda never comes out on Wii U and instead is pushed into NX cycle. So not that the game is canceled. I want to make that clear. I'm not saying the game is canceled. I'm saying it's not coming on Wii U and it's moving to NX. So
now, I don't think that's a regrettable thing, actually. I would think that would actually be the best case scenario for Zelda, depending on how powerful the NX is. Because sure, if the NX is way more powerful than the Wii U, I'd much rather play Zelda on the NX than I would play it on the Wii U.
Right.
And we could see another Twilight Princess in our hands. We could see,
yes,
we could see Zelda come out on the Wii U, but it also comes out on the NX as well. Because, well, why not?
Here, I hope that's the case. I hope it comes out on Wii U and on NX. I hope it's like, it comes out on Wii U, 4 months later, it comes out on NX because NX is launching and they're able to, you know, up-res the game or whatever. And I agree with you. I'm sure it would be a better experience on whatever the NX is, because the NX has to be at least some way more powerful than the Wii U, right? It has to be more powerful than it. Or I can't see that they would pull a GameCube to Wii again and their technology not go forward again at all. So I don't see how that happens. However, I have to say, regrettably, because one of the reasons I bought a Wii U was for that open-world Zelda game. It was for Mario Kart. It was for Mario Party, unfortunately. That game was abysmal. It was for Smash Brothers. It was for Super Mario 3D Land. It was for Donkey Kong Tropical Freeze. And it was for Zelda Open World. And I feel like that game is being slowly ripped away from me. And it's as if, imagine you were promised the next Xbox, and this Halo game was going to be amazing. Or even Gears of War. Let's say you got your Halo, which is the equivalent to the Mario Kart. And Gears of War was on the horizon. And you're like, yes, dude, I'm getting an Xbox 2, if that's what they want to call it, for the next Gears of War. I'm so stoked. I saw that trailer. And then a year later, hey, here's a new Xbox. And the new Gears of War game we showed you is only coming out on the next Xbox. Would that be frustrating?
Oh, yeah. No, that would be terrible.
I mean, it would be great to play that game on the next console, sure, but the whole, one of the main staples, the main reasons you purchased that console was to play this game and to have it kind of ripped out of your hope and your hype for that console is pretty unfortunate, I think. And I think they would upset a lot of people, myself included, to the point where I may not even get the NX because of that, even though I really want to play that Zelda game, just because I would feel so... I already kind of feel burned for being a purchaser of the Wii U, which is really unfortunate. But if that happens, I feel like I'd be really, really burnt. And I'm not talking Bernie Sanders burnt. I'm talking straight up crispied. Okay. All right. So Troy, did you think of your next bold prediction?
Okay. So your bold predictions were that certain games would not be seeing the light of day of 2016.
Right.
Would it be okay if my bold predictions would be the games that probably will see the light of 2016, but will actually not be as good as they are touted to be?
Yeah, go for it.
Okay. You asked for
it. So you want to make some predictions that some games that are scheduled for 2016 are probably not going to be very good.
Yep.
That are going to underperform.
Yep.
Yeah, that's perfectly fine. Yeah, do it.
Yeah, well, you're going to be disappointed. First off, let's go ahead and just get the big one out of the way.
Right.
I think No Man's Sky is not going to be as great as people think it is.
I think I'm going to have to agree with you. I think there's something spooky with that game, and like I don't really know what I'm going to be doing.
I don't know what the point. I mean, the point's exploration. I get that. But there's got to be some order, some objective, some sort of enemy,
right,
anything. I mean, sure. Go to a planet, discover it. Cool. Go to the next planet and discover it.
Right. Like you can go anywhere in Skyrim, but walking up to the top of a mountain and seeing a tree on the mountain is like, okay, well, why did I walk? Why did I waste 6 hours getting to the top of this mountain to see a freaking tree growing in some snow? You know what I mean? Like, there needs to be more than that.
The bad
I agree
thing,
with you.
is I'm getting a Spore vibe off of it for some reason. Like,
which was a fantastic game for an hour.
Yeah, exactly. You know what I mean? It's like, oh, that's cool. That's great. I'm done. Yeah, I'm done. Yeah.
I wholeheartedly agree. I love Spore. And then, like, after an hour or 10, maybe, it wasn't 1 hour. I played it for longer than an hour. I played it in multiple sittings for a couple hours at a time.
But those sittings just kept getting lower and lower. It's like,
yeah, exactly.
All right, I'll play 10 hours of this, and then down to, like, 6 and 2. And then
I think it was once I got to space, actually, which is ironic because we're talking about a space game. Once I got to space and, like, this whole galaxy opened up, and I was like, oh, my God, I can go to any planet. And I go to a planet, and it's like, okay, well, I'm supposed to start over all of that gameplay. I'm just supposed to bring my species here and then build some civilizations and just repeat this over and over and over and over again. For what purpose, though? And that's when the game just, like, broke in half. Like, I couldn't continue. I didn't find a point to doing it. So I agree with you there.
I'm going to throw another one on yours with probably Star Citizen. I don't know if we're going to see a full, like, actual Star Citizen game in 2016. Not a beta, not an alpha, not an early access. Like a full-fledged Star Citizen. I don't think we're going to see that in 2016.
So Star Citizen does not get fully released this year, you don't think?
No.
Okay.
Just I don't know. They've been making tons of money, and it seems like they're not making as much headway as the money is allowing them to make.
You know? It seems like every time they get another $10 million, they're like, well, we're going to add a first-person module, and we're going to add, for people out there who are confused, what Star Citizen has done initially was to promise a space simulation game. And it's a lot more complicated than that. But essentially, you'll be able to play any character you want. You can be a smuggler. You can be someone in the military. You can buy all these ships. You can transport goods if you want. You can be basically whoever you want to be in space. Many of the games in the past have tried this. But what made Star Citizen so special is that as they got more money, they started promising more quote-unquote modules. One of those modules, for example, was a first-person shooter module. So if you picked, for example, the soldier and you wanted to play as a soldier and you had your spaceship and you went and traveled and you found a derelict spacecraft and you went on that spacecraft, boom, the game will switch to a first-person shooter style of game and you can mow people down with a gun. They have essentially an alpha for that module. So Star Citizen and its developer, I think it's Chris Roberts, perhaps, as they've gotten more and more money, they've started promising more and more complex and different modules, which on paper look amazing. You go, wow, this game is going to be a first-person shooter. It's going to be a space sim. It's going to be an adventure game. It's going to be a role-playing game in a sense. It's going to be, you know, this political thriller in a way. It's going to be a third-person action-adventure game. But what Troy is saying is it seems like it just keeps growing more and more rather than finishing what they initially started on.
Yeah.
I agree with you, Troy.
And another one that just seems like it might just be a disappointment from what it was touted to be is the Mega Man clone that is Mighty Number 9.
Right, yeah.
That thing's seen such change in development. Like, it showed off as being what would be essentially a Mega Man clone. It was almost the exact thing as Mega Man is now offering, like, oh, button combos and stuff like that. It's like, well, you're losing what Mega Man was and doing something completely different. It's like you offered us Mega Man, but now you're giving us something else that we didn't ask for.
So what's your prediction on Mighty Number 9? That it doesn't come out full release?
Oh no, it's going to come out. It's going to come out. I mean, it's the release date is February 9th. So it will come out. But it's just not going to be as great as people wanted it to be.
Okay, so you've got No Man's Sky and Mighty Number 9 underperforming as well as Star Citizen not even coming out full release 2016.
Yep. And
do you think Star Citizen underperforms? Whenever it does come out?
It's a hard one to say because the stuff that they're adding to it looks amazing. Looks like it'd be fun. Yeah. And it's actually giving us stuff that Star Citizen, not Star Citizen, but No Man's Sky is not going to be doing for us.
Right. So far.
It's like, okay, we get ship-to-ship combat. We get to jump out of our ships and kill each other, basically, or, you know, jump into space and float around and stuff like that. You don't seem to do that in No Man's Sky, or we haven't been shown that just yet. So I would think Star Citizen would do a lot better as a game, but the fact that it only comes out on the PC also just kind of may hurt it a little bit.
Right.
Whereas No Man's Sky is, you know, PC and PS4. So
right.
A bigger audience just makes it a little bit better sometimes. Gives you a little bit more leeway on which system you want to play it on. You know.
Sure.
You don't have to invest in a gaming PC, you could just have a PS4. Or vice versa. If you don't have a PS4, you got a high end PC, you just play it on that. So right. But I don't know if Star Citizen will underperform.
Okay.
What would you consider underperforming? Not getting the money that it basically is taking in donations?
I would think underperforming would be critically or not critically acclaimed and not generally accepted as a good game by the community. So if what would be a good example? I guess just if No Man's Sky came out and, like you said, people just didn't really enjoy the game, then that would be what I consider underperform or underdeliver. And that would be what the question was entailing when I asked if you thought Star Citizen would do that. But I think you brought up some good points. There's a lot more, I think, substance to Star Citizen.
Yeah. And
if that game does finally release, I think it does have a chance to perform very well in terms of at least how people perceive the game, whether it's good or bad. So, okay. My last bold safe bet involves Nintendo.
Oh, boy.
And it involves the NX again. And here's my prediction. It is that the NX is two new pieces of hardware. And you could think along the lines of a new console and a new handheld. So I'm actually going against the general idea out there that the NX is a hybrid of the two. That is a new console that can be both portable and home. I'm going to go against that and say, I'm thinking it's time for a handheld refresh, complete refresh, and it is time for a new home console. And I think Nintendo is going to drop two of them that are in some way very compatible with one another. That is essentially, you could consider, a family of devices that even perhaps has a VR element to it. But that's like a very tiny, tiny down the rabbit hole prediction that, like, maybe I could see them pulling that back out after the disaster of their Nintendo VR from like the early 90s. But I think NX for sure is going to be two new pieces of hardware, one of which will be a mobile device like a 3DS. The other will be a home console. And I back that up by looking at how long it has been since their mobile line has really had a huge refresh. I'm not talking about the new 3DS. I'm talking about from the DS to the 3DS, or rather the Game Boy to the DS. I think it's time for a new handheld, a truly new handheld, and I think it's time for a new console. And I think they're going to find a way to integrate these two, maybe to where the handheld can be the second screen for the home console, to where you could play it in the other room just like you could a Wii U right now. Or you could your PlayStation on your Vita or your Xbox One on your Windows 10 PC. I think it's going to be something along those lines. And then obviously you could take your handheld with you. The handheld, I think, will work with the NX as a controller. So if you have both, you automatically have two controllers, one that came with the console and one that is the handheld. And I think you're going to have a lot of cross-play, cross-buy situations that you currently see with Sony and its PlayStation Vita and the PS4. And hopefully one day with the Xbox One and Windows 10. So that's what I think. I think NX is going to be two new pieces of hardware for 2016. Definitely announced in 2016. I'm not comfortable guessing that it comes out in 2016.
Mm.
But definitely E3 this year, boom, they're going to show NX, whatever it may be. Okay. What do you think about that, Troy?
That is highly plausible. be interesting to see the hybrid version of that, but
yeah,
I know that it will be, there will be something at E3. There will be some sort of presentation of it at E3.
It's there just, will be blood.
And probably will be at that, because I guess it'll be igniting a new console war altogether. But yeah, no, that one will more than likely happen. I can't see a reason why it wouldn't happen, actually.
Okay. We got it. We got that one. All right, let's get to the crazy stuff. Let's get to Crazy Town, all right? Let's go to Ludicrous Theories. Ludicrous Crazy Town Theories. Troy, you got any of these things? Things that are just off the wall bonkers? What? That you maybe don't have any reason to guess, but you're just like, you know what? Screw it. Xbox 380 number 2 squared.
Let's see. A resurgence in the Kinect.
Oh my god. Drop the mic.
I don't know why, but yeah, why not? A resurgence in Kinect. Microsoft sees the errors of its ways. They come out with a Kinect 3, and it's a lot better than the other ones. Basically, as another answer for VR. And the reviews for it are actually good.
I want to take a screenshot, or not a screenshot, a picture of my notepad here where I have my predictions written down. And the very first one under Ludicrous Theories, I have new Kinect model refresh. I think the same thing. I think, why not? You know, Microsoft, be crazy. Just say, here's a new Kinect for $99 or cheaper. PlayStation sells theirs for, I think, $60, but it's not anywhere near as effective. Which is not that effective as the Kinect, but yeah, why not? Be crazy. They have utterly ignored that thing for about a year and a half. Why not refresh that thing? Yeah. Say, give a trade-in special with their old Kinect?
Why not? I mean, it could be the answer to the HoloLens for the $3,000 that you'd pay for that, so. yeah, why not? That'd be the answer. That'd be the super bold prediction of that.
Well, Kinect not even bold, 3.0.
Just, yeah. Crazy.
Okay. Kinect 3.0. And I'm going to add on to that they could couple that with Xbox Live, almost like a financing leasing operation, what you do with your cell phone at Verizon or AT&T, T-Mobile, whatever, to where you can get a new Kinect 3.0 with your Xbox Live Gold subscription, as long as your Gold subscription goes up, like, I don't know, like $75 a year or $80 a year or something like that. We're hoping that you pay like $20 down on the new Kinect. Boom, you go ahead and buy a year's worth of Xbox Live for like $85 and hoping to help push those to keep you on board with Xbox Live, which will continue to be $85 if you have a Kinect. I don't know, something crazy like that. So they can kind of lease these Kinects to hopefully get them out to more consumers. So I think that's crazy. We both picked that. I got another crazy one. New Guitar Hero. I think Activision is going to screw themselves again, just like they did with Guitar Hero the last time. And they're going to put out another freaking Guitar Hero, not even a year after the last one. I don't think we see a Rock Band, but I think we see another Guitar Hero this year. Crazy. So,
yeah, I mean, that is crazy considering that. Why? Why would they do that? I mean,
why did they release it last year? I have no idea.
Just because, you know, Harmonix decided to do a Rock Band, why not?
That's probably true. Yeah, probably exactly the exact reason. I bet you're right.
Ugh, man, just.
And I wouldn't doubt if it's like Guitar Hero David Bowie edition, and it's just a God rest his soul. You know, all that was really tragic. 100% tragic. I think I could totally see Activision doing something ridiculous like that and try and cash in perhaps at the end of the year, you know, I don't know, something like that. Trying to put out a special like they did with Aerosmith or the Beatles was Rock Band, I'm sorry. Aerosmith or
Metallica.
What was it? Metallica, was that Rock Band? Yeah. Or Guitar Hero?
Mm-hmm. It was.
I think they did one more as well. Maybe it was just Aerosmith and Metallica. Mm-hmm. It was like an 80s rock. I think
that they did 80s rock, because I was going to say Green Day, but that was Rock Band as well.
Yeah. Okay.
Now, wait. would this be coming with another guitar, like a, yes. another revamped guitar, or would they just yes. be using the, oh, God. Okay.
Revamp it. Come on, Activision. You got to get crazy.
Yeah, okay, I was about to say, a David Bowie version of Guitar Hero probably isn't all that far-fetched, but one with another guitar that's almost basically the same as the other guitar is absolutely ridiculous. So, yeah, why not? Another crazy prediction is that for some strange reason, Battlefield decides to go back to World War II. Battlefield and Call of Duty both go back to World War II.
Both of them? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. We're getting tired of the modern stuff. We're going back to World War II.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, that's...
What was the game recently that had a World War II level in it?
Apparently, the Black Ops 3 had a...
That's it.
Had a World War II level in it. That's a pseudo World War II level in it. Apparently, it was a dream sequence, I believe. I think that's what it was. So, yeah. I mean...
Because Crazy Town, I actually played that game this year, which is... Yeah, I went even crazier, I bought that game this year.
Exactly.
Yeah. Nuts. Yeah, but that's crazy. Both Call of Duty and Battlefield, wow, goes to World War II.
Yep.
That's funny just even like thinking about it. Oh my gosh. Would you buy that game?
I'd have to see some stuff.
Yeah.
I'd probably more than likely buy a Battlefield World War II game, mm-hmm. considering that there are just more people, and you know, that's always fun. Having more people in a game, like a World War game, would be better than a Call of Duty World War game, because the multiplayer in Call of Duty World Wars were not all that great.
Right.
They weren't as fast paced, I guess. It didn't seem like it, but as these new ones now, so yeah, I would probably buy a Battlefield World War II game of some kind. Probably be called 1945 or something. Battlefield 1945 or 1944.
It's gonna be curious to see where they do go after this, because
well, they went with Cops and Robbers last time, so
yeah, Battlefield did try that. That's true. Although that wasn't really DICE though, was it?
I think so.
Was it DICE?
Yeah. I think Hardline was DICE.
I guess it doesn't really matter, because obviously they have Infinity Ward and Treyarch and
yeah, exactly.
The other studio doing, I think it's Sledgehammer doing all three of those Call of Duty games. Yeah. But it'd be interesting to see, maybe does Battlefield go futuristic? Do they go? I mean, I could see Battlefield going futuristic, or even World War II or World War I, but Call of Duty, they're already in the future. Like, they've been in the future mm-hmm. for many games now. So I don't know. Like, do they go even further into the future? Like, we get space combat, like low gravity fighting and stuff? I don't know. It'd be interesting to see where they end up going. So, all right, let's see. All right, a ludicrous theory. Going back to NX. This would be, if this is true, the other parts of my NX theories are completely bogus. But what if NX is completely 100% VR? That's it. It's a VR, dedicated VR console sold in one package for you to play Mario and Mario Kart and Zelda and whatever in VR. That's my ludicrous theory, that NX is 100% VR. It is not a VR add-in. It's not a Kinect. It's not motion controls. It's not even... It's a whole new experience packaged in one product, one console, one VR headset, boom. You got your Nintendo VR.
You know what's going to be the problem there?
What's that?
There was another thing from Nintendo that was purely VR, and it was called the Virtual Boy. And yeah, I don't know if people aren't still burned from that. And that's probably another reason why VR may not take off as much as it needs to. So, boy. I mean, it'd be interesting to basically burn away the hate and disgust that people had of the Virtual Boy with a Nintendo VR game, the Nintendo VR system that actually works.
Yeah. I played that thing. I remember that thing. It's its major downside was that it was in like one color.
Yeah, I was about to say all like red and black.
That was it.
Yeah, causing major headaches for most people. So
major headaches. Major, and it wasn't even really that 3D. So the technology has definitely come a long way. So I don't know, but that's my crazy prediction. I don't think Nintendo's getting back in the VR. I really don't think they will, but if I'm just thinking crazy theories, what if their Nintendo's like, F it. Cards on the table. Drop the mic. Let's just do it. Let's go all in for VR one last time. If this doesn't work, that's it. We're going mobile with Pokemon because they're going to make all the money in the world anyway when they get Pokemon on mobile. So
yeah, Pokemon Go.
Yeah,
or whatever it's called.
You got any more Crazy Town theories, Troy?
Let's see. I mean, there are always crazy theories, like a resurgence of Star Wars galaxies. No. That would never happen. World of Warcraft luring their subscription. Something. Nah, no, I don't really have any more crazy ones. Because, I mean, there's crazy and then there's just like just making up stuff.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, we're kind of just doing that now, but I mean.
All right, let's jump into. We will round out the show then, if that's all the predictions that we have. We will round out the show with a couple of games that we are most anticipated to see then for the year 2016. So, Troy, I'll start with you. If you only got one, that's fine. If you got a couple, that's fine. Just give us, for now, just give us one game that you're really eyeballing for the year of 2016.
Okay. This game's been, apparently it just exploded this past weekend. With footage being shown Friday and them just calling Let's Players in to come play the game in Los Angeles, and that's The Division. I think I may have found my answer for Destiny.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. Now, the problem that we have with this game is that it's Ubisoft. And another problem is that it's Tom Clancy.
That's true.
The last Tom Clancy type game where it was kind of like that was End War. If you remember that one, where it was like an RTS kind of, where you just gave voice commands and stuff like that. And it's your country versus other countries, basically.
Right.
Yeah. I'm hoping that The Division, and from what I've seen so far, The Division doesn't look anything like that. It's looking amazing. It's looking like a game I'm wanting to play right now, and I'm glad I am in the beta at the end of this month to play it. Because, man, the gameplay looks awesome. The tactical yet MMO qualities are pretty much awesome. The only bad thing is that it just doesn't look as great as it did before, you know? And, I mean, maybe it's just because it's a beta, or maybe because, of course, usually when they do gameplay footage at the start, it's on a high-end PC, so, you know. But, yeah, really looking forward to The Division right now. That's one of the games I'm looking forward to.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to The Division as well. Unfortunately, the games like Destiny, those big shooting RPG co-op games are not generally big on my radar, but I have to say I am excited for The Division a lot, especially a lot of the stuff that I have seen. It seems to be a correction on the algorithms of Destiny that are more suited to a player like myself, in addition to the players like you who enjoy Destiny. So hopefully that is that ends up being the case, and this game is really, really good. I've seen a lot of really great reports on the world building for The Division. I remember one outlet called the area you play in The Division is more interesting and more engaging than all of the planets and worlds in the game Destiny, which is pretty crazy to think that just this one city, which I believe is a one-for-one match of New York City, which is insane. But I also heard mixed reports on microtransactions. So I heard the representative from the Ubisoft, or rather from the developer, saying, yeah, we don't have any microtransactions. We're going to have traditional DLC, though, in the form of like a season pass. But we're not having any microtransactions. But there will be things that you can buy that will be downloadable. Referring to the small things like vanity items, I think is what he said. I think he said vanity items. They're going to be vanity items that don't affect gameplay that will be purchasable by downloading them, essentially. Yeah. So, which is microtransactions. So I don't really know where the microtransactions are in that game. I'll have to wait till it actually comes out. But you know, hopefully there's no emotes for $10, and hopefully the season pass is not $40. That's not a knock at Destiny. That's a knock at lots of games from last year, including Batman, Fallout. I think had that as well. But yeah, you know, hopefully they get the gameplay experience really good, and the rest of the BS that is going to be attached to this game, unfortunately, because Ubisoft is producing it, won't really matter that much because the gameplay experience will be so good. So yeah, I'm excited for that one as well. The other one that's not my number one, but I'm going to throw this out there because as we're building up to this release date, I'm getting really, really excited. It's XCOM 2.
Damn it, you took
that
my
game is that. Well, it's all right. You'll talk about it right after I will. I won't talk too much about it. It's coming out in just a couple of weeks, and I'm seeing more and more gameplay videos and people playing it, and I'm getting really, really excited. Are you? I guess you're excited, Troy.
Yeah, it almost seems like it's the year of the tactical like gameplay so far. Like the beginning of the year seems a lot of tactical gameplay is being pushed out with both The Division in March and XCOM in February. Yeah, I've been seeing a lot of people they've actually been starting to put out videos of XCOM being played and stuff like that. And, you know, you're more of a renegade, like guerrilla tactics fighters more than instead of the government funded fighters that you were in XCOM 1. And it looks great. And it seems like it's playing like pretty much the same with some very good, just added details and stuff. And new abilities and things like that. So it's exactly what you'd want out of a sequel. I guess the main issue for a lot of people were like with this sequel, it's playing off of one of the endings that came off of XCOM 1. So if it wasn't your ending, you know, too bad. Sorry, it's the other ending. So, I mean, that's probably the main gripe that a lot of people are having, but I have noticed a lot of just positive feelings coming from this game, a lot of not too many negative marks on it or anything like that. So, I guess the only other negative is that it's only coming out to one system so far. It's only coming out to PC.
That's true.
So, PC Master Race.
There you go.
You know, you never know. It may come out on other things, but it's suitable for the PC. It's best to be played on a PC, like any RTS for the most part. So, yeah, no, XCOM 2, definitely one of the ones I'm looking out for and ready to play as soon as it drops.
I think the other one that's pretty big, I think that's it's on most, I'm going to go ahead and add two of these in here. That is on most people's radar, I think, that a lot of people are talking about. Is Uncharted and No Man's Sky. Uncharted obviously is the big player in the room. It's the it's Sony's Halo, essentially. It's their big, huge IP that's just sitting there that is a staple on their console. I think Uncharted is probably gonna be really good, just like the other Uncharted games. It's gonna be huge, it's gonna sell really well, it's gonna be critically accepted. And then I think No Man's Sky, I'm really excited to try that. I'm really nervous that what you said in your predictions is true, that it will be a letdown. But at this time, I am still hyped for that game. What do you think about Uncharted? And we already know what you think about No Man's Sky. What do you think about Uncharted?
Yeah, Uncharted, definitely. I don't see why that wouldn't be on anybody's, like, yeah. I'm excited for that game, of course. Why wouldn't you be excited for it? It's potentially the ending chapter of the Nathan Drake saga, so if you've played the other Uncharted games and you kind of like them or like them enough, then yeah, you're going to be playing this game. You're going to probably enjoy this game. And if it is the end, you're going to be sad because it's the end. You don't know what's going to happen next, but it's the end of that saga. Hopefully there'll be another saga that will replace it, or maybe this will just free them up to do something else. So yeah, hopefully. I mean, I'd actually enjoy that if they free them up to do something else. But yeah, I'm super excited for Uncharted, especially once I get a PS4. You know, there's the issue right there. It's like, I still need a PS4 to play it. But
that may be the game that finally does.
Oh no, that will be the game. That will be the game. If it was bundled with anything, you know, if PS4 decides to be smart and bundle it, then yeah, that's going to be the bundle I get, okay, without a doubt.
And I think it's not really a surprise. People who know me really well probably could have guessed this, but
Crackdown.
No, that is, I'm excited for that game, but we have not seen hardly anything on it. The only fragment of information that I've seen, actual gameplay I'm referring to, and this is going to make me sound so controversial once I tell you my most anticipated game, but on Crackdown, it's been very minuscule developer like teases on their computer at work where they like show the physics engine being run on the cloud or whatever that BS is they want to try and feed us. But excited for Crackdown.
I think I know what you're going to say.
Mass Effect Andromeda, man.
Yep, I knew it.
I'm so stoked and excited and hyped for that game. And I know nothing about that game.
Nobody knows nothing about that game. One thing we know is that a developer left from that game. So,
yes, well, the director left. Drew Capuchin is back. He's back. No one knows. Anybody listening is like, who the hell is Drew Capuchin? Why is that a big deal? Why did Brad's voice just raise when he's talking about Drew Capuchin? I'm probably not even pronouncing his name right.
Probably not.
But if you played Mass Effect 1, 2, and 3, what is the glaring difference between 3 and 1 and 2? The difference is the story just kind of fell apart in number 3. The events that were being led up to in Mass Effect 1 and 2 were just utterly ignored, for, other than the Reaper invasion, obviously, which was the main focus of the story. But the little things, the little details that were supposed to be support structures for the entire story of the Mass Effect saga were just kind of washed away to tell this, you know, hero's journey towards death, spoiler alert, in Mass Effect, I almost said Halo 3, Mass Effect 3. And part of the reason for that, A, was they wanted to focus on multiplayer a lot as well, but B, because Drew Capuchin, one of the lead writers for Mass Effect 1 and 2, left to go write books. Like, he wanted to go write his own books. And the lead writer for Mass Effect 1 and 2, as well as, I think, the original Dragon Age game, which explains Dragon Age 2, the abomination of that game, he left and wasn't planning on coming back until recently, probably a few months ago, he was hired back to work at BioWare to work on, I think, the new Mass Effect Andromeda game, which is fantastic because the story that he had laid out for Mass Effect 3 originally, which eventually got scrapped, was fantastic. It was going to use dark energy and dark matter. There were events on Mass Effect 2 that it was, I think it was Tali's home planet. If you guys remember Tali, the girl who was always in the mask because her body like couldn't deal with germs and whatnot. So her and her kind were always in these little masks and these suits so you can't really see her face. There was something going on with her planet where her star was essentially, the star in their solar system was essentially like killing itself or something. And it was causing all these problems and you had to go to her home planet and it was the level where you couldn't be in the sunlight for an extended period of time. So you had to like rush through, otherwise your shields would deteriorate and then the sun would kill you. And there was that whole thing and it was building up towards this eventual realization that the universe, all the civilizations were going to have to harness the power of dark energy or dark matter or something in order to stop the Reapers. All of that got washed away, which was probably going to be much more interesting than what actually happened in Mass Effect 3. So, Drew Capuchin coming back. I think the writing chops are back down on the table. We're going to get our good story from Mass Effect, whatever it may be. The fact that we heard Shepard's voice for the latest trailer is really interesting because they already said Shepard's dead, Shepard's not coming back, blah, blah, blah. Then why do we hear Shepard's voice? Like, what ending are we actually getting from Mass Effect 3? Because there's a lot of problems at the end of that game that really makes it basically impossible for people to traverse through the galaxy, especially go to another galaxy. So I don't really know what's going on with that game, which I think makes me more excited. I'm really excited for Mass Effect Andromeda. What do you think about Andromeda, Troy?
I got to see more of it. Got to see some more of it before I can make an actual prediction on it. I mean, that was another one of those predictions I could actually say is that it probably won't see the light of 2016 as well. Like, I don't think it will. It's scheduled for 2016. I know it is, but it probably won't see it. You probably won't see it on 2016.
I think it has to have a big E3. If it's going to come out this year, you have to see a lot of it at E3. If you don't, then don't expect that game to come out in 2016.
Yeah, of course. Now, I do have two more.
Okay. Which one is your most anticipated game? Don't say it. Have you already said it or no?
Yeah, I already said it. I mean...
Okay, never mind. Never mind. Go ahead with the other two.
I mean, I'm just looking at the other ones that I'll...
Whichever one is more anticipated by you, say that one last, and we'll talk about that one last. And that'll wrap the show up.
Okay. All right, yeah. Now, the one that I'm not most anticipated for, but it's just, you know, it's going to be an interesting game. And that's if it even comes out in 2016. It is the Xbox One exclusive from Rare, Sea of Thieves.
That's a good one. Yeah, I'm really excited to see that one too.
Multiplayer pirates.
That's right.
That's all you need. It's pretty much all you need. You're a pirate. You have your own ship. It's multiplayer. Massively multiplayer. On the ship.
Yeah.
Yeah. No. What do I need? It's probably about as close as a Skies of Arcadia game that we're going to get without being Sky Pirates, because we're actual pirates. So yeah. It's probably the only Pirates of the Caribbean game that you'll actually get that's actually worth anything. So, there you go. I mean, we don't have enough information just yet for it, but it just looks like the type of game that would be very, very interesting to a lot of people, as long as you can get the people to play it. And, again, it's an Xbox One exclusive, well, Xbox One and PC. So, you will, and it's cross-platform. So, yeah, interesting. Just, like I said, a pirate game is probably one of the better games to be playing. Love the Monkey Island series. Love, like, Sid Meier's Pirates. So, definitely looking forward to Sea of Thieves.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I want to play. I'm fans of all of those games you just listed. Huge fans of Sid Meier's Pirates, Skies of Arcadia. Like, those two games, Sid Meier's Pirates and Skies of Arcadia, are probably on my top 10, if not top 5, best games that I have ever played. And so when I saw that, I was like, my friends that are watching this with me, they don't understand like how excited I am for that game. My only reserve there is that I, like you said, with Mass Effect, which is so contradictory in my own way of thinking.
Not enough.
I haven't seen enough yet. I just want to see more. I want more concrete details. I certainly trust Rare, although it's not the developer they were when they made GoldenEye. I understand that, but I'm anxious to see Rare make something that is not Kinect related, that is not Xbox Avatar related. So I'm excited to see them make a game. This is right up our alleys, I think. I just want to see them come out on E3, have a big E3, show me all of the modes, show me all of the limitations. Show me all of the freedoms, like what's going, like, are we leveling up? Does everyone get their own ship, or do you get one ship and you get crew members, or do those own players have their own ship? And like you join lobbies, which changes your ship. Like I want to know all of that stuff. Mm-hmm. So when I know that, that's when I'll finally set aside the correct amount of excitement. So what's your next one, Troy?
Now, The Division was the game I was most looking forward to so far, but there is a game that was, and is still one of those ones that I'm definitely looking forward to. And I gotta ask, do you remember a character named Adam Jensen from a certain game?
I do.
That was kind of awesome. And there's a sequel to that game coming out this year. I'm talking about Deus Ex Mankind Divided.
Ooh.
That game, when it was shown, looked gorgeous. Looked amazing. And I'll tell you what, I don't know how many copies of Deus Ex Human Revolution I had or played or I played it on multiple systems. I loved that game. I loved pretty much all that game. And this one is looks to be bringing back everything I loved, and will probably bring back a lot more things that I am just looking forward to, such as the freaking Tesla, the new gun augmentation in the game. I am definitely looking forward to this game. Too bad it doesn't come out until August. But at the same time, August is one of those the dumping grounds for video games, so you know it probably is a good reason to have that game there, so it's not flooded by other competition or anything like that potentially. So it could be the big boy on the block for a couple months when it gets dropped in August, and I will definitely be playing that in every different way I can, either stealthily or just killing everybody and everything with all the guns. All the guns and the nano swords and everything else. So, yeah, I am definitely looking forward to that game. I mean, it's like I said, the Division's a little bit higher up there because I'm actually starting to see stuff for the Division. Some more stuff that I'm liking more. I love the tactical stuff, you know. That's why the Division and XCOM are on that list. But Deus Ex, it has something that I really love, and it's a deep story. So, I am, like I said, I'm excited to play again as Adam Jensen and his cool sunshades.
Yeah, I think I need to be more excited, and I probably will when that game comes out. I really liked Human Revolution. For some reason, I'm not that excited for the new one. Not that I think it's going to be bad. I think it's probably going to improve a lot on what the last one had. I think it's flying a little under the radar because of everything else that's on the horizon, like Uncharted, like Mass Effect, like No Man's Sky. Heck, you could even throw in Star Citizen, XCOM into there. But I think it's going to be good for sure. And I really enjoyed the first one as you did. So I'm definitely going to be keeping an eye on that one. I think it comes out when, did you say?
It's August 23rd.
It probably is going to need to have a strong E3 if it's coming out at that time. So hopefully it doesn't get kind of drowned out in everything that goes on at E3 and people just kind of forget that it's coming out in a couple months after that. So, but I am definitely excited for that one as well. All right, Troy, any other final games or comments you want to predict on or talk about before we wrap this show up, or is that about it?
No, I think that's about it.
All right, well, then, like I said, that will wrap us up for this episode of VGCast. As always, if you guys like what you see, please give us a thumbs up, a like, a review, and or a rating to show us some support. Feel free to subscribe via iTunes, via Podcast Addict, which is my recommendation for Androids, or simply via Podomatic.com. However, special note, if you're listening to this fairly soon after release date, Podcast Addict has been removed temporarily from the Google Play Store, citing some pretty erroneous and bogus allegations to the developer of Podcast Addict. It's awfully ridiculous why it's been delayed, but if you do go searching for the app, that is why it may not be on the Google Play Store, although I'm sure the issue will be resolved soon. Again, it's Podcast Addict on Android. You can even try Pocket Casts if you could not find Podcast Addict, and as well as in the podcast app via iTunes or via iOS if you're on an iPhone or iPad. Thanks everyone to tuning into this episode, and as always, keep gaming.